From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, our weekly conversation with BlackAgendaReport.com columnist Margaret Kimberly. Her column this week focuses on last weekend's conference by UNAC in Richmond, Virginia, UNAC being the United National Anti-War Coalition.
The United National Anti-War Coalition, UNAC, had its fourth national conference in Richmond, and I'm on the administrative committee of UNAC. And UNAC is unique, dare I say, for a couple of reasons. A lot of the so-called anti-war groups, a lot of those peace groups, disbanded after Obama won the presidency. They were more anti-Bush, more anti-Republican than they were truly anti-war. UNAC is an anti-war organization, and we say stop the wars at home and abroad. So we have a politics that's definitely left-wing, and I don't mean Democratic Party. That's not left-wing.
Yeah, right.
Our members may define themselves in a variety of ways, but I think it's fair that most are socialist or have that orientation, and that means it's also anti-imperialist. You can't just say that you don't want the United States to invade Iraq. It's not enough to say that. That happens for a whole host of reasons that need to be addressed politically. One must be anti-imperialist, anti-capitalist, anti-neoliberal here in the United States, anti-racist. All of these things fall under the umbrella of this coalition. Black Agenda Report is a member of UNAC and groups all over the country and all over the world. There were people there from Hungary and Serbia and the Philippines and Colombia and Palestine. I know I'm missing some places trying to remember right now. But it's a national and an international formation committed to opposing the causes of war, not just to say that the U.S. should not have tried to destroy Syria, but to talk about what creates that dynamic. Why is the U.S. in endless war at abroad? Why are there endless wars against segments of the American population, in particular the prevalence of anti-Black racism? And the day the conference convened was the day that the cop who murdered Philando Castile was acquitted. So, and all of these things are tied. You can't fight mass incarceration without fighting racism, without fighting. Now there's a whole construct where imprisonment is a profit center, so you have to fight capitalism too. So there are commonalities in all of these struggles, and that is the goal of UNAC, to bring people together to find ways to take action against all of these issues, and to do so in solidarity with each other.
Yeah, it's I can remember back in, you know, my early mid-teens when the Vietnam War was raging and the prospect of my being shipped off over there to get blown up or whatever was looming in front of me and a lot of other people our age. And I remember that the call was very often to end the wars at home and abroad. There was a connection between those things then. And you point out in your article about the irony of holding the conference this year in Virginia, whose goal, the conference's goal, to unite anti-war, anti-imperialist, anti-neoliberal, and anti-racist forces, saying if the U.S. is the belly of the beast, Virginia is the inner lining. It's where the ulcers take place.
Yeah, I had not thought about it before. I'd never been. I'd been to those areas of Virginia that were, you know, suburbs of Washington D.C., but it was my first trip into the state, so to speak, and it was a reminder of America's founding. You know, we emphasize so much the, you know, Plymouth Rock and the New England colonial project, but it all began in Virginia. That's where the first British colonies took hold. That is the place in 1619, the first enslaved Africans were brought to these shores. That's where genocide of Native Americans began. And it's funny, in Virginia, there are all these reminders, you know, the name Pocahontas and Powhatan and King James and James River and Jamestown and all of these, you know, this legacy, not remembered in the way, frankly, that it ought to be, that these were horrible crimes against humanity. But so there we are speaking out against the legacy of America's founding. And I think it's important to remember because it's difficult. You would have to have a real revolution for a country whose founding was based on genocide to turn around and become just.
Yeah,
because it's too ever-present. You know, it's you have a system of enslavement that lasted for more than 200 years. You had the modern-day police. That's a continuation of the old slave patrol, where any white person had the right to patrol the black community. So here we are now dealing with this legacy, and it has to be that has to be acknowledged in order to move forward.
Yeah, I mean the property that was stolen first, the land and the genocide that accompanied that, and then the labor to work the land and the genocide that accompanied that. That wealth, a lot of it has been inherited to heirs who exist today, and the rest of it transferred, sold, or whatever to people who, quote unquote, legitimately hold it today. And we've seen examples of wealth held, for example, by institutions like Brown University or, you know, whatever, where, you know, you can trace back the ancestry of the creation of that wealth to the people who were enslaved that created it, or the people whose land was stolen to create it, etc. The system itself, in other words, fundamentally still rests on those two crimes against humanity.
Yes, yes. And we talked about the case of Georgetown University, I believe I wrote about it, and I believe we discussed it some months back. Georgetown University exists because of a sale of enslaved people. So, and that is the case to be made for reparations. I believe we need to make the case more for socialism rather than reparations, because as you point out, the personal wealth of individuals, this huge gap in the amount of resources of wealth accumulation between black people and white people. It's some terrible statistics where on average, white people have 300 times as much wealth as black people. And in order for black people to catch up, we would have to all be employed and never spend any money, essentially. And then in several hundred years, we would catch up to white people. It's something grotesque like that.
Right.
And to be in this system, to fight against this system, we have to know that that is true. And we have to talk about how we would go about changing it. And the change has to be something more radical than talking about, you know, affirmative action or some other form of reparations, which I'm in favor of. But that could not undo the injustice and the damage that was done from that injustice.
Yeah, I mean, if you think in terms of attaining socialism, for example, and reaching a condition that was described as from each according to his abilities to each according to his needs, you know, it was a very rocky road getting there, should we ever get there, and people, of course, en route suffered in all kinds of out-of-scale ways. And, you know, for example, when you say, and the tribute quote the statistic that the average wealth of average white person is 300 times that of an average black person in the United States. For some white people, it's, you know, like, I have $30. That means you've got 10 cents. You know, whereas, say, the average group subgroup next to someone might be, well, I've got $1 billion and you've got $30. And so maybe going right to socialism rather than trying this complex calculus that people always use as an excuse not to do reparations, when you get to the part where to each according to his needs, of course, you're looking at, you were much more intensively exploited than that person. That's part of your needs, is to remedy that. And the reparations would occur within the context of satisfying the needs of every member of society. It's an interesting problem.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I gave an incorrect information. It's not 300 times, but it would take about 300 years for black people to catch up. That is correct. It's not 300 times. Yeah. As much wealth. So
there is some
out of
scale.
Myself.
That's okay. But there is some out of scale thing like that too. And actually, the wealth gap having started to grow again over the last decade or so, which, you know, was closing ever so slowly over a 30 or 40 year period when there were at least some remedies being applied. But when that got reversed, and then as everyone's and among working class, particularly, and poor, quote unquote, as the assets got evaporated into the banks' pockets and everything else, that gap started growing again. So it may be five or 600 years now.
Well, that, you know, that raises another point of, you know, trying to encourage black capitalism. I feel that is a waste of time. I don't think we need more capitalists or more capitalism. What black people need is socialism, because when we try to play by the rules, and people are, well, there was a time when there was more living wage work and people were able to, let's say, purchase a home, which is the basis of wealth for most black people. But then we have this crazy system where in order to create this housing bubble, people lost that wealth.
That's right.
And may never, ever regain it. And now we have this economy, the so-called gig economy, where there, you know, isn't even a pretense that you're going to get decent living wage job where you can accumulate money to buy a home or have a financial security. So I think it's pretty clear that needs to stop. Talking about black buying power and encouraging black capitalism, it's a waste of time and a misdirection. So back to UNAC. We had one of our speakers, a young woman who is Ethiopian, pointed out that the path to peace is the path to socialism. And because it's essentially the United States goes around the world trying to take other people's stuff. And to take their resources, or to even keep a country like Venezuela from using its resources to help its people and to help other countries. So it's either taking other people's stuff or making sure nobody else gives away their stuff, or it's trying to maintain this crumbling system, and it all becomes more and more cruel as the foundation gets shakier and shakier. So and it was also ironic. Part of the conference, we marched to a place called Shaco Bottom in Richmond. Virginia became known as the slave breeding state. That was actually an industry, believe it or not. And it was the place from where people were sold to, as the plantation economy grew in the Deep South, as those last lands were taken from the Indians and cotton cultivation took hold. Virginia was the place from which enslaved people in the more upper slave states like Maryland and Virginia and so forth were sold down south. And Shaco Bottom in Richmond was the site of a burial ground for enslaved people, and then later a site of an enormous slave market. And there are people there, a group called the Virginia Defenders, who have worked very hard, struggled to maintain the site. There were proposals to use it for commercial development to build a minor league baseball stadium, and they want it preserved and expanded. And so there we were standing on the ground of this terrible crime that we have been talking about. But it was important, and it was a perfect site for the conference with all those ironies to come back to the beginnings of this country and the crime that built the wealth and the power of this nation. So that was a perfect way, the perfect way to end the conference, as we talked about war in Syria or mass incarceration, to come back to the place where all of America's crimes started.
And there was a special acknowledgement of that, I guess, also with the newly formed Black Alliance for Peace, attending also. In other words, an attempt, as you've described, Glenn Ford has described, others, how the Obama presidency shifted the direction and the orientation of, and more than ever so slightly, of the Black community in the United States on the question of war, from being the most anti-war among the population to perhaps remaining there, but much less so, where they're going to do an outreach and try to organize on the question of war among Black people in the country.
Yes, the Black Alliance for Peace was is a recent formation, very new, started on April 4th. The day of Dr. King's assassination, which also took place a year to the day when he publicly opposed the Vietnam War. Ajamu Baraka, who is a Black Agenda Report editor, the vice presidential candidate for the Green Party, is one of the founders. And as you say, there was always a proud tradition that of a radical politics in the Black community. And we were always the most left-leaning of every constituency in the country. We were always the most opposed to war, to foreign interventions. And that changed with Obama. And the urge to protect him and to defend him very sadly turned into a rejection of that history, which was so important to us and to the whole country. And the Black Alliance for Peace is an effort to bring people together and re-energize that movement, that anti-war impetus that we have always had. And it's something, now that Obama's out of office, it's possible to do that. I mean, but there are other problems with that. The the death of Black politics is something that started happening before Obama became president, where Black elected officials were bought off in larger numbers and with more money than they ever had been before, and that neutered them and neutralized any, and when I say Black politics, that does not necessarily mean having Black politicians. It means that there's a politics that asserts our needs and asserts our worldview and makes even an attempt to address the unique conditions that we live under. And that was already weakened when Obama became president. His presidency was really a huge setback for Black politics in this country, because he made it clear personally that, as he said in that maiden speech at the Democratic Convention, there is no white America. There is no Black America. There's just one America. And that's not true. But, that's how I always argued in those years when Black people would debate whether or not we would ever see a Black president. I had concluded that I would not want to see one, because I knew that would be the way for that person to be elected. It would be to deny that we exist, frankly, as a group, to deny our history and to deny what it is that we need in order to have some semblance of justice in the country.
Going back, she's at least Marcus Garvey, if not earlier, down through Malcolm and Martin Luther King and others, the relationship between the condition of black people in the United States and international politics was clear, stated, affirmatively stated. And when you look at the way the Obama administration was utilized by the elite here, by the hand behind the curtain or whatever, one of the largest accomplishments in terms of power that it has under its belt that it achieved was the retaking of Africa by taking out Libya and installing mm-hmm. AFRICOM. And it proves the case that that you're making here, that essentially the concept of, or the fact of, a person with African features, physical features, essentially was the agency of weaponizing those and using them against people in Africa and here of African descent and everybody else.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, Libya is especially sad because, you know, part of that tradition, that political tradition that black people had of being opposed to U.S. foreign policy meant that we supported governments like that of Libya. If nobody said anything good about Muammar Gaddafi, black people did. But because his country was crushed and he was killed by the Obama administration, there was silence about it. And that had a devastating impact, obviously, on that country, but on the whole of Africa. And as you point out, on the consolidation of AFRICOM, whereby the United States controls the military of many African countries. And this is a very dangerous development, but it was all consolidated under Obama. So there was, unfortunately, a lot of silence about it. But the United States shouldn't be controlling any countries. That is our argument at UNAC. We believe in sovereignty of other countries. The United States tries to dispense with sovereignty and rights for individuals here, for countries around the world. But we are saying that countries should be able to assert their sovereignty and not be either vassals of the U.S. or declared as enemies that have to be crushed.
So this was the fourth conference for UNAC, right?
Yes.
And you've attended others. I've seen you at some. I didn't attend this year, but maybe you could let our listeners know some things that you saw this year that were different, other things that you see that are being built upon, and, you know, like that sort of like a developmental snapshot of what's happening as of, this past meeting.
Yes. Well, we built upon the work of earlier conferences in 20. I believe it was the first conference in 2010 UNAC, and this was huge. Voted to support a cessation of American economic and military support for Israel, and that was big. And a lot of people left. But that's okay. You have to take a stand. That was a very important stand to say that UNAC was anti-Zionist. It's still difficult to sometimes with many groups of people to declare oneself in opposition to the policies of Israel because it gets conflated with anti-Semitism and there's always an accusation of bias against Jewish people, but UNAC made that decision and did not turn back. The first conference, which was in 2010, I believe, the emphasis was more on international relations, and every year there's more emphasis on domestic issues. We learned this year more about some international issues that haven't gotten attention in the corporate media here. There's been a huge mobilization in South America, in Colombia, among the black population in the Buenaventura region, a work stoppage, a general strike that went on for several weeks, which closed down a port and which was successful, and demands were met. It was huge, but it's something. If Charo Mina Rojas had not been there. She's also written for Black Agenda Report. It's something I wouldn't know anything about.
Right.
And so we brought in also issues such as the fight for $15 an hour minimum wage, which ironically is still not sufficient to be a living wage, but the federal minimum wage is listed a little more than half that. So we're also striving to find ways to take action. We don't want to just be a talk in our own little echo chamber and, hear our best friends talk about right. issues that we agree on, but finding ways to take action around the country and to build upon the possibility of having a general strike right here in the United States, and to take action against ICE and deportations, to take action against mass incarceration, and to find ways to make community control of the police a reality. And that's a struggle that's taking place in several places around the country where there's legislation pending and people running for office who are pledged to fight for that, because that's the only way to stop police murder is for the Black community to have, and not just civilian complaint review boards, but actual control and of police departments. So those are some of the things that that we are working on, and anyone who's interested can look at the website unacpeace.org and find out what member organizations are doing around the country.
And finally, can you describe a condition, and this has been well worked at Barr for sure, and deservedly so, which where you have, say, more Black politicians than ever before, and yet a worsening condition of Black folks in the United States. This is also the condition, and you described the Black misleadership class. There's also the labor misleadership class, a condition in the United States where, 40 years ago, a third of the population was unionized. Now a tenth of it's unionized, and that tenth more compromised than the third was of 40, 50 years ago. Struggling to organize, say, a national strike and things like that within that condition. What are some of the, first of all, is there any discussion of this labor misleadership class and that condition, and is there some kind of a game plan on that?
No, not specifically. We did not talk about the labor misleadership class, but all these misleadership classes, Black misleadership class, labor misleadership class, they're all tied to the Democratic Party. And that is a huge problem, no matter how badly they are treated, no matter how much they are dismissed by Democratic Party leadership, the way they are used to basically to subvert any true movements for change, means that they have to go. And that's actually the first struggle, in my opinion. The first struggle is not against Trump and the Republicans. I think the first struggle is against the Democratic Party, because that is where people, in a variety of places on the progressive orientation always end up. People are shamed into not voting or not voting for Democrats. So, people continue to hold their nose and support them. But I argued that stop holding your nose, stop supporting them. Those class of politicians, of union so-called leaders, have to be confronted, I believe, first. And while all those were not issues we discussed at the conference, that is something where people on the left have to go. It's true we have a system that's hostile to third parties, but to me, the answer is to get rid of the Democratic Party once and for all. It has to just be destroyed. And there's no hope for justice in this country as long as they're allowed to go on. In this recent election in Georgia, where, 50 million dollars was raised to try to get a conservative Democrat elected in a red state. And this was something that was supposed to galvanize Democrats. It was disgraceful on so many levels. And that's something we have to stop.
Margaret Kimberly has a weekly column at blackagendareport.com entitled Freedom Rider. This week's column, UNAC brings power to the people. Margaret, thank you very much. Pleasure as always.
Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.